Hang on. Wait.
The phone.
Wait. Oh.
Jesus Christ. I was pretty good there. You got to admit. That was pretty good.
A gaggle of geese. More fun than a room full of wombats. Able to reach huge audiences with a single broadcast. Yes, it's the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. And now, another exciting episode in the adventures of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Well, howdy there. Welcome to the program. I'm Angelo Biola. He is Peter Bowman.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Is it a new year already?
Yeah, we're in the new year now, right?
Volvo over there, Nick on vacation, and Dean.
Come on now.
We always got something different. So he's Volvo there, and Dean's there, and Nick has got some kind of a something
vacation.
Other.
He's in school. God only knows where he is. He probably makes all that crap up anyways. I have no idea where he is. Welcome to the program. We're excited to have you here once again.
Come on now.
Interesting. Thank you. See, you're on.
I'm on the buttons now.
He's going to interrupt you all this whole show.
An interesting program. Well, no, we do not have a guest today. Well, no.
I have a guest as you, and you have a guest as me.
We have a guest. What's the show about today, Mr. Ball?
About no guests. About having no guests. We got a potpourri, a whole mixture of everything. So we got lots of news, and Clint Eastwood's involved too. Yeah. Lots of news items and kind of current issues going on.
So what does that mean? I'm curious at this point. I just like to maybe throw this out there, maybe to the audience. What does it mean? When obviously, you know, we're not a Mickey Mouse operation here. We have bodies running all over the place. We have staff and payroll and stuff. So it's not like it's a lack of resources. What does it mean when we come on one of these podcasts and say, we don't have a guest this week? Is it by design, you think?
Yeah, by design.
It's by design. So there were guests lined up. We just said, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We're okay. No, I'm just curious.
They're lined up outside.
Or they might have said, hey, wait a minute, not this week, maybe next year.
I'm just curious. I'm asking the questions that the audience might be thinking, and I'm
the audience
on their,
might like just you and I. Just like on the Fish in the Canada show.
I'm just
asking. You never
asking.
Know.
I'm asking. I need to know. So, Dean, you're saying that this is by design.
Yep. Three of our top five last year were just you guys. So
that means
they like
more
you guys.
More than less. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, who knew? All right. Now we know. So now I don't have to worry. When I come on the mic and say, we don't have a guest this week, it's not because somebody didn't do their job. It's not because
we
were
refused.
Because we need
to up our ratings. That's why we need to up the ratings.
So we need to up the ratings so we'll have no guests when we need to get more audience.
Come on now.
I like that.
Yeah.
See? Now I feel better. I hope you do too because I needed to know. Anyways.
Oh, we're
God,
starting off well,
us.
Aren't we?
God help. It's a new season. It's a whole new year. So I think we – by the way – you know, I don't want to say anything, but.
You don't want to say anything, but you're going to, right?
But I'm going to. It is the new year. So that means that certainly in this part of the world that we live in, it generally means it's winter, right? So the question, I'm looking at the screen now and I'm wondering, I know why we're sporting the Fish in Canada brand because that's what we are. And we by the way, have you been to the site lately, to the store. There are more new things going up there every day. But anyways, my question is, it is winter. I have a hoodie on, sort of a winterish kind of a thing. Mr. Bowman, on the other hand, is coming in a nice little t-shirt that he should be maybe down in the Bahamas, freestyling one of those wind surfboards or something.
Well, Volva's got a short sleeve shirt on over there, and Dean's got like you guys are. It's like a split right now.
I dress this way all the time, though, all year round.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
long sleeves.
I do agree with you because if you turn the heat on in this place, then I'd be feel
so
better with this
of a,
thing on.
It's here, a heat but, issue. Thank you. But I'm trying to sell the folks on wearing. You know, it's winter. Let's get the hoodies. We got hoodies
you
featured
can't wear
on
a t-shirt in the winter.
We have
like
hoodies featured on the store. I'm just
throwing a lower priced item out there. That's all. Hoodies are, you know, they're
very attractive, by the way. I don't want to mislead people that you're not sporting well. You look very attractive
hell
in that
yeah.
fishing can.
Can Steve give me a hell yeah?
Give me a hell yeah.
Thank you.
Embroidery and everything on there.
Absolutely, okay. Buddy.
All right. Uh-huh. Good. I got it all over.
Are you finished now? Are you done?
It's out.
Okay. No it's guests. Out. And Pete's got a T-shirt on. Was this going to be like a pessimistic show, number one?
By the way, the new Fishing Canada season, which is upon us as we speak on Global Television Network, on the Sportsman's Channel, on WFN, on YouTube, everywhere now, we are in new season mode. And I got to say, I want to send a round of applause to everybody who worked on the new series. Because it is stunning.
Yeah, it looks great. Looks really good.
Don't get overly excited about it. Relax. I don't want you to break into a sweat or anything. I'll take over from this point. It's stunning.
I'm in the dictionary.
It's good.
Under Peckerhead. Stunning. Angelo's photo is right here.
Stunning. Stunning.
It's, yeah, it's
you might want to help me sell the notion.
I think it's going to sell itself. It's so good.
It is. Okay. Every Saturday on Global Television Network, coast to coast to coast in Canada. Saturdays, 8 a.m., except for the folks on the left coast. They get to sleep in and watch it at 10:30. God bless them.
God, I wish, yeah. That'd be so nice.
God bless them. The rest of us
have
to get up.
When's the last time you slept till 10:30 on a weekend? Aside from your New Year's Day.
Yeah, that one I think I went till noon. That one
was a little hit her pretty hard, didn't you, okay, kid?
Not that bad, actually. It wasn't. I didn't. If you're insinuating that I may have had one too many drinks New Year's Eve,
mm-hmm.
I really didn't.
You said you did earlier.
I know, but I've been analyzing it ever since. Right? I've been analyzing it.
You see what I got to go through?
You once you put it down on paper and start drawing it out, it wasn't that bad. So it must have been the atmosphere, the mood, the moment that I got wrapped up in that made me feel that way.
Okay. That's what it was. It wasn't the 40 Creek involved or anything like that, was it?
There was, but... A funny story I'll share with you a little later on here about our good friend Stevie Nidzwicki.
Oh, boy.
And his son Mikey.
Oh.
Who went away with the family on a New Year's vacation.
Down to Mexico or something like that. Yeah.
And Mikey had his first experience.
Well, there's lots of things that could be Mikey's first experience.
Especially in Mexico.
Especially in Mexico.
No, he got carried away with the drinking. And story is just
hilarious. My God.
I'll give it some thought whether I want to share. Mikey might not like
me. Mikey might hate you.
So we'll see.
Mikey's pretty big now, too, so you might cross him.
Winter sale. I mentioned the store earlier on. Well, there's a winter sale going on as we speak. You can see it right there, the sign right here, and it's telling you there's all kinds of good things going on there. Make sure you get there and check it out. Mr. Bowman.
Yes. Well, I mean, make sure it's shop.fishingcanada.com, too. We want to say that, don't we?
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
I think we should.
Failed me.
Listener feedback. And this one is coming from Mike Sutton. Mike, did he say where he's from, Dean?
No, he didn't.
No? Okay.
Via Folks, email. Tell us where you're from.
Yeah, Mike, it doesn't hurt. You know, we just want to know where, you know, geographically you're situated. Mike is, we were talking about bar trauma probably two or three episodes ago or something like that.
How did we get on to that subject?
It was last episode, actually.
Last episode, okay.
That's what he said, yeah.
Yeah. A couple episodes, give or take. My life doesn't matter anymore, folks. I'm just close. That's all I got to be is close on anything. Alberto, so Mike's email says he was... He's watching a YouTube video.
Yeah, watching a YouTube video.
Okay. And it completely debunked that Angling Buzz, which is a Lindner production. That's a weird word, by the way. The Alan Ron Lindner, it's not L-A-N-D-E-R, it's L-A-N-D-N-E-R, right?
That's right.
It's a weird one.
Yeah.
But hard to say, too.
Yes.
Especially with Alan Ron, you got to say it twice. Their production... They showed, I'll read this. Let's read it. There's quite a few details, which you should watch the video. Some factors were time out of water. This is bear trauma. So on crappies, released into a confining cage and clipping the tails. Plus, he actually used live scope to confirm fish survival. Hope you can discuss, clarify this on the next podcast. Thanks, Mike. Well, I actually watched that. It's funny you say that because I watched that video at Mikey Burris's house a couple weeks ago or a week ago, whenever it came out. We were just
talking
about
a lot of Mikey's today in the show.
Eh? Yeah. And I watched that. The first thing, time out of water, you and I have always said, time out of water is crucial. You catch that fish, you should get it right back if it's showing any signs of barotrauma. If you get it back instantly, that fish can get a big push and go straight down into the water. So the time of the water is very important, obviously, in that. They were showing that. I don't know what this clipping of the tails was all about. I don't, because I didn't watch the Lidner production of it. I just watched this YouTube video of it.
Clipping of the tails.
So they actually cut the top of the tail fin
so that they could identify the fish again?
Which is
dumb. How are you going to...
And why clip that one? I'm not sure. But yeah, I think in the video, Aaron talked about, he showed a graph of what, like how much that affects the fish to clip that part. It was pretty, like, it's pretty impactful.
It seems like, yeah, the caudal fin, right?
Any fin on a fish.
Yeah.
It's critical. For years, we don't do it anymore, to my knowledge. For years, we would clip fins to identify fish that were being stalked by this group versus fish that are stalked by that group or versus, you know what I mean?
And it was by year, too. Remember? They did by year. Okay, this year.
And so you clip this fin or you clip that fin. I don't care what fin you clip. It's like cutting off your foot. I mean, let's be honest, or an arm. Well,
a finger, maybe.
Well, what do you mean a finger? A fin?
Well,
it's an arm.
They can't. They did not take any of the. I don't think they took any of the important. Did they take the pectoral fins? They did take the pectoral fins.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay.
For years, all of our steelhead that we're going into
swimming around
with one arm. So I don't care what anybody. I don't mean to make fun of that. By the way, don't get me wrong. But if you cut off an appendage on any living creature, it's going to affect the way it performs. I mean, it's not necessarily going to die, but it's going to affect the way it performs. So any study that requires...
Is that it, Dean? That's the actual study?
Yeah, those are the nets they use.
Anyways.
Yeah. It was weird watching these... Mm. It was weird how they released a new net like that. And the fish did... I think some of them were seated down, but a lot of them went straight to the side of the net. Right, Dean? They went right to the side of the net, and then they just got discombobulated and came back.
So what are we saying here? Am I understanding this correctly? Is we have an individual who has his own agenda, who is debunking another individual production company on a study that was done on crappie.
Is that what I'm saying? The bigger issue was that the MNR was involved with the other study, with the Angling Buzz study.
Right. And Lenders have been around for a million years. I have no reason to believe that they would knowingly do anything in terms of studies or research that would be anything but the proper and effective way to...
What was the conclusion of the Lenders study? Did they say, hey, they can't be released? These fish can't be released?
Yeah, the deeper ones pretty much can't be released, and that if you are... fishing those, you're better off keeping what you get and then moving on.
Yes. So. And versus Aaron was saying he's releasing these fish. Well, I watched him releasing these fish. See, something else, Mike, than your letter, you said use live scope to confirm fish survival. That's incorrect, Mike. What happened is you watched the fish go back to the bottom of the lake. That's
not live
all
scope.
You saw. With live scope, you watched it. You watched the fish go down the bottom, but that doesn't mean they survived.
No.
They could die within an hour, 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, whatever, because of the barotrauma. We don't know that because Anson and I were talking about this earlier in that there's really not a lot that we've heard from experts in the world of barotrauma and freshwater fish, at least.
There isn't. Right? The reason being, it is such a difficult and subjective study.
And things engage.
It depends. It depends on which way you want it to go.
Yeah.
I mean, you really,
what Mike says here is the way a lot of people are just thinking that. They see, hey, that fish went back to the bottom. That's it.
Done.
It's good.
Good.
Right?
Move
that's
on.
We all think
we're good
that.
To go.
It's good. Yeah. The fish has a chance, a better chance than laying up under the ice there at the surface. That's for sure. So it's very gray. It's a very gray area. So.
There just isn't enough information available. We don't have the technology available. We don't have the scientists willing to invest the time and effort and money into the studies. And so anything that we see now, we kind of have to take with a grain of salt, use a lot of common sense, and try and make the best of it. So
I did that last trip that Mikey and I were out in the boat, I kept some nice smaller walleye. I had three in the box, and two of them were upside down. So I thought, and I have a fizzing needle, and I've never used it. You know that. Yeah, you and I, we're always like that. I had a fizzing needle. I got out in a boat, pull up a YouTube. Ted Takasaki is a walleye tournament angler like that. And I thought, you know, what the hell? I'm going to keep these fish. These fish are going to die, right? It's because I'm going to fillet them. So put the thing in, and all of a sudden, you see the air flowing out of the belly like that, like that. 15 minutes later, you look down there, and they're just happy as hell in that live well, just swimming around like.
So you did it.
Best thing ever.
Good,
yeah.
Good for you.
Like just to practice it, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the end result of those fish is in the frying pan, but no matter what.
Exactly.
But,
they fried up good.
But they fried up excellent. Fizzed. But you know what the freakiest part of that whole thing was? Is when I grabbed that fish to fizz, those two little fish, and they weren't big. They were small ones, like 3-pounders. When I grabbed those fish to fizz, they've just really laid there kind of lackadaisical and did nothing. As I was fizzing, you could start to feel them getting some strength back. And by the time it was almost done, they were like wanting there. So this air in them must really...
How long did it take you?
Minute, maybe something like that. I'm just guessing. I mean, I'll tell you what, it was cold on the hands because the water was 38 degrees.
Oh.
It was nasty on the hands in a live well. But when you let them go, they look like a different fish. It's just totally.
And how did you determine the proper entry point? How did you
through that video? Okay. I watched a video and I just took a chance on this. What it, you know, this is the way he does with walleye versus like it's a very different place than with smallmouth fishermen. Smallmouth anglers take the fourth spiny dorsal fin to the anus, they take a line there, and then they go back from the pectoral fin to that intersecting line, and that's their spot to do it on. This one was more like it was about an inch forward of the anus and then over towards just towards where the white of the belly meets the color of the scales. Just popped it in there and the old bubbles just started flowing. Freaky.
Huh.
Yeah, and the fish just came right to life. Like, honestly, it turned those fish from zombies into athletes. That was crazy in that sense.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a positive thing for sure. Well, they've been doing it for a while. They've been fizzing
these
walleye during walleye tournaments forever, right?
So, anyways.
All right. That's an interesting subject altogether. Can we at some point get somebody on here that can maybe shed some light on this?
Yeah, I think we'll get a couple people because I think the opinions are all over the place.
Yeah.
So we should talk to a few, I think.
Yep, for sure.
Speaking of catch and release.
Yes.
Which we were. Thank you, Mike, by the way, for sending that. If you have any questions like Mike did there, he obviously saw something that he wasn't completely clear on. So he said, let me talk to the boys and see what they can come up with. And we did. But you too can join in on that. If you've got a question that relates to fishing, the outdoors, anything that we might have some intel on, by all means, give us a shout via email. Is that the only way they can reach us?
This one was on YouTube, I believe. In the comments on YouTube,
look
I got
that.
This from.
It says via email here. Woo-hoo. Mike Sutton via email.
Okay, maybe this one was on email.
You were setting my Dean up. Weren't
no,
you? You were
no,
setting him up there.
I'm just looking right there. It says, and I'm assuming, now I could be wrong. And please correct me, because I know you have several assistants that work for you here, interns. But I'm assuming that you gave them the directions on writing this
If it's
document.
In there, it's correct. Everything in there is correct.
Oh, so it was via email then?
It was, yeah.
Ah, okay.
So, I remember now.
Ah, so it just came to you. Okay, good. Hey, the Dean machine.
Busted.
Anyways, thanks, Mike. Anybody else, you can reach us via email or whatever Dean deems to be appropriate at the time.
Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube comments.
There you go.
Okay.
More on catch and release on fishingcanada.com now. Let's not get that wrong, too, right?
That's the intention.
There's a three-part series that's going on right now. It's kind of connected to Mike's question, I guess.
Yeah,
three-part series. History of catch and release is the first part. Number two is effectiveness of catch and release. And once again, you know, even that question needs to be asked over and over and over and over again. Because there is no definitive answer.
Right, because Well, we know some fish, you catch them and you know that they've been hooked before or whatever. So you know that that fish, individual fish, catch and release work. But it doesn't mean every fish it works out, either, right? So you have to...
And you know what the secret here is, I think, or the key to all of this? And we've discussed this before, and we just discussed it again a few minutes ago. Depth. The depth.
That's huge.
Because huge. I know from personal experiences, and I'm talking with largemouth bass now, not smallmouth or walleye or anything else, but I'm talking specifically with largemouth bass, that shallow water largemouth bass, and shallow water can be, it's kind of relative to what you believe is shallow, but, you know, we're talking anywhere from 2 feet to 8 feet. Let's call that shallow water.
Yeah.
And anything beyond 8 feet, we start maybe calling it mid depth. But anything in shallow water, as it pertains to largemouth bass, I can tell you from personal experiences that the release success is nothing short of amazing.
Phenomenal.
Reason being is because we've caught those fish again from the same spot.
Absolutely.
Days or weeks later. So
or years later.
Or years
later. I
have
one fish that I, a largemouth that in about 10 feet of water, 8 to 10 feet of water, I caught three times and I know it's the same fish, and that was over a span of about 7 years.
Yeah. They live there. That's home.
That's home. They know. And it's got markings on it. So, yeah. And I've released that fish two other times. I got it a third time. So, yeah, absolutely. Largemouth is a great example for a survivor, right? They are like a zombie fish.
Yeah.
They just go and go and go, right?
So they're the perfect release specimen.
Yeah,
if you're doing a release study, a catch and release study, a largemouth are good to work with if you want that study to prove conclusively that they will survive and go on and thrive and reproduce and all that stuff. However, two things there, the species and the depth. If you take those two off the table, I think most of the other studies and information, certainly that I'm familiar with, are, and I use the word subjective because it depends on where the author of that study wants to take you. If
right.
he's on the side right, that yeah. catch and release works, the study's going to take you to proving positively that it works. If that study is being done by somebody who is anti-fishing and anti-releasing a fish, that study, it can be turned to prove that we shouldn't be fishing or should not be releasing fish.
Mm.
That's why I say they're subjective. There's not a study yet that I'm familiar with that is scientifically based and without a shadow of a doubt will tell you that the catch and release success rate is the scales are balanced on the fish's side that it will survive.
Yeah. And then you add that 30-foot level of barotrauma what fish, that's where the big controversy comes in for sure. So but like, and the last part of that is ethics of catch and release. What one thing that Angelo Viola and Reno I think used to say all the time, and it just makes so much sense, is that if I don't throw that fish back, he's dead. If I release that fish and it swims away, he's got a chance of living. So that's the other way you got to look at it.
Yeah, you remove all doubt.
You know,
you want to remove all doubt about catch and release? Yeah. Don't release any fish. Kill everything that you catch.
Yeah.
Now we removed all doubt that fish is definitely not going to survive. Put it back in the water. Yeah. Right? There's a good chance.
Yeah.
And that's part of the ethics. But anyway, it's an interesting three-part
article
on fishingcanada.com. And the title is Catch and Release, The History of Catch and Release. So check it out. Podcast Network, Mr. Boma. Look at us grow.
Woohoo! And the highlight of this is you could win a trip of a lifetime to Nordic Point Lodge. So Northwestern Ontario, we're going there this year, actually.
Yes, we're going to shoot up there
this year. Will Pulowski, Will and Krista have been... generous enough to donate a trip for two, 4 nights, 3 day package at their place, all inclusive, boat, motor, all your food, everything goes with this trip. Fantastic. And the lake is nothing short of phenomenal. It's got walleye, it's got muskie, it's got northern pike, it's got smallmouth bass. I think he's got crappie in it too, if I'm not mistaken. And good numbers and good sizes of each fish too. So on Fishing Canada, this is a $4,300 U.S. value.
Yeah, it's $6,000.
By the way. Just yet another great prize package that we've been given a chance for our audience.
And as you're listening, there may still be avails on getting in on the contest because it expires the end of January. So if you're listening to this, chances are real good. You can go over to fishingcanada.com as we speak and make sure that you are entered in this wonderful contest.
Give it a shot.
4 nights, 3 days to paradise.
There's an interesting story on the next story. This is why you give it a shot, because the next part of this, Daniel Cozzolino, is that the way you say that?
Cozzolino.
Cozzolino.
See?
From Richmond. Richmond Hill, Ontario. That was good. That was very good. But just won, I think it was yesterday or the day before, Dean.
It was yesterday.
Yesterday, oh, won our Garmin LiveScope Plus package.
Wow.
And what a great prize. But the reason I said that is Daniel was shocked when Dean called him. So Daniel was, he didn't believe it. He just, Dean said, yeah, dude, you won. He was so happy. So what I'm trying to say is that anybody can win. Now, Daniel put a lot of entries in. He tried his damnedest to win, and guess what? He won. Good job, Daniel. So anybody can win, even with one entry. But, I mean, the whole point is that you're not going to say, oh, I'm not going to win that, because somebody's got to win it.
But you make it sound like it's a real chore.
It's not a chore
to enter and to have, like,
I just want people to enter. I'm saying the people that are getting intimidated and they say, I'm not gonna win.
That's because I read an email from somebody, I don't know how I got it, but somehow I ended up with an email from one of our contestant goers, and he was actually complaining. Well, if you'd make the contest easier to enter, it might make it a fair contest for people like me that don't like to put any effort into winning things at all. I think I should just be able to sit here and you should send me stuff. That was basically what his letter was. You know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
I do.
You would make it easier, more people would enter. Well, guess what? It's only the biggest contest in the nation in our industry. So I don't know how much bigger we can make it. There's millions of ballots being cast every month into this thing. So I don't know how much bigger we can make it or how much easier we can make it.
Is that the guy that complains about everything? Is that the
same guy? No. That's another one.
Oh, my God.
God love you. If you're watching this podcast and you're one of those people, we're not being mean and angry or anything like that. We're just, pointing things out, making
a point.
Because it behooves me how... Here's what I'm thinking.
Here we go.
Here's what I thought I was reading that letter from him. I was thinking.
It was a him, right? It wasn't a her.
It was a him. I was thinking there was more effort and time spent composing that piece of literature because it was very well written.
There
was more time spent. The time he spent doing that letter and sending it out to us, he could have had 100 free entries into the contest.
Yeah.
I figured it out. Yeah. He could have actually had 100 free entries. The time it took him to complain about how hard it was to get an entry into our contest, he could have had 100 of them. So
wow.
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, it's Daniel is proof that hard work will pay off or could pay off, right? He put a lot of entries in. So it's up to you. You can't win without being in. That's all. Just get some entries in there. Just
all I know
is
that we're pushing $1 million worth of goodies that we've given away in 2 years on that. Two or three years. Wow, it's 100,000 just in Ontario giveaways, trips.
Yeah. Nine motors at one point?
Nine outboard motors, a boat motor trailer. Yeah. I don't know how many Garmin units we have given away.
God.
I don't know how many Coleman tents we've given away. I have no idea. All I know is that we're pushing the million dollar mark.
We're getting there.
And it's fantastic. We love doing it because it is really great to read comments from people like Daniel Cozzolino.
See.
Grazie. From Richmond Hill. And thank you for putting that in there, Daniel, from Richmond Hill. Or no, actually we knew because we don't have to send the product. That goes out directly from Garmin.
Yeah, but I have to send the address to Garmin. So.
Oh, you had to send them the address. Okay. Anyways, who won a LiveScope Plus? Congratulations, and thank you for...
And good work, buddy. Good work, Daniel.
Keep it up.
Nicely done.
Okay. I'm tired now from all that work.
See, we haven't even got to the meat and potatoes yet.
I'm tired.
Look at all this stuff we got.
You're going to have to pick up some of the slack here because, man, I'm bush. I may have to take a break. I don't know.
Excuse me.
You did that already. There you go.
No, but no, we got more. This is right. High-tech on fishingcanada.com again. We have high-tech hard water. How to use LiveScope for ice fishing.
Oh.
It's another great piece on there. So it's a full breakdown of the technology. You know, the real. Well, we've talked about LiveScope Engine tons of times. We use it mostly, 99% on the open water, but we have used it on through the ice too. And it's just as effective through the ice. It really is.
I think it might be more effective.
Well,
you have less movement to worry about.
That's the thing. That's right? The whole key about it. Your transducer is dead still until you turn it or maneuver it. But if you're pointing in the right direction, all that can happen is you can see fish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
The
in
fact
that, sense.
That you're stationary, I think, is the important thing there. Because when you're on the nose of a boat, the boat, no matter how you've got it locked in, the boat's got some movement, right? Whereas when you're sitting on the ice, you're stationary. So if that transducer is pointing to your right, it's to your right.
Yep.
There's no mistaking where that fish is.
Yep.
And when you move it, there's no mistaking to where you're moving it to.
Yeah.
On the boat, there's a little boat
there's
movement.
Variances, yeah.
Variances that might, but and on the ice.
You got to learn on your boat. There's more of a learning curve, right? There's more of a learning curve.
Oh, for sure.
To figure out
sure.
where they are, where I got to point it, where I got to cast, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
When you're on the ice, it's a whole different story like that. And then the best part about LiveScope on the ice is you get to your area-ish. You just punch a hole. Everybody's pretty much got a decent auger nowadays. You punch a hole, you drop your LiveScope transducer in, you start spinning around 360 degrees, and you look for where the fish are. That does help a lot. You know what I mean? That's like, there's or even a weed bed or a rock. There's a couple of rock pile. You know, a couple of rocks in a pile. Uh-huh. You just point to it and say, okay, I'm going to go fish over there. You mark it at 50 feet on your mark it away.
How accurate do you think that is, where it says, 50 feet?
It's very accurate.
To the point where you could actually measure off 50 feet on the surf on the ice.
Yeah, I've seen it
and
done.
Say that is exactly where that.
There's been
is.
A couple of studies. There's been a couple of studies. Not only that, but on the angle shooting out too. I always thought the transducer shot a straight angle. When Garmin first told us
it was a sliver. They called it a sliver.
Yeah. It's not. It goes out in almost an angle or angular.
So like a cone, like a regular transducer,
almost like a cone in that sense.
Wow.
Yeah, it's wider at the farther point. Is what these guys are doing. And they're proving that on the ice is the best way of proving that, because now you walk out there and then you go, oh my God, at 30 feet, you see the drop something down the holes are here. At 50 feet, you can drop them out here. You can see,
you can see the width of the cone
or whatever you want to call
That's
it.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Have we talked to the folks at Garmin about that at all?
I have not. No.
Perhaps maybe we should.
Well, or we just go do our own experiments and
we could
learn on
too.
Our own too.
That's kind of fun, too.
It is kind of fun in that sense. So, anyways, LiveScope on the ice for ice fishing. If you can afford it, you better get it. That's all I can say.
And I think where, from my perspective, where it really pays off, too, is in being able to determine the size of the fish that you're seeing.
Yeah, it does. It does help that.
And what's fishable and what's not fishable, or what you're after, what you're not after. I think that is a big breakthrough with this technology as well.
Yeah, and groups of fish, like panfish, crappies, you know what I mean? You're looking at a couple fish, individual fish over there. They might be perch. You see this big ball of fish. They say, well, that's probably crappies right there. So, yeah, it's so much fun. That's all I can say. It is so much fun to fish with it. It's like it's just a whole new game.
Probably even more so through the ice, now that I think of it. Because let's be honest, for the most part, ice fishing, unless you're onto the mother load of fish, it's not the most exciting form of angling.
Right.
Yeah. You have to entertain yourself in other ways. Well, I think this technology kind of
absolutely
changes that, right?
When they first introduced fish finders in general, flashers to ice fishing, it made a whole new game for everybody, because now you're kind of concentrated. Like when I was a kid, I've said this 1,000 times. When I was a kid and I used to go ice fishing with my dad, it was horror. I hated it because I go out, he'd drill me a hole, and I'd stand there for the day.
The whole day, kid.
And you just think about how just dumb that is. Like it's just like, oh, my God, when I think of it today, I think, my God, Dad, why'd you do that to me? You
it's, know punishment. I mean? So, it's punishment.
It's punishment. Yeah. He's probably out there drinking a beer, grabbing a crock of whiskey or something going. But nowadays, it's so much fun. It's so much more fun, you know what I mean? I did rainbow trout one year, ice fishing, and I had my live scope set up on my hole in the hut and on my set line out. So you can run it in a straight line like that. And I had both lines, and I saw a rainbow trout go over to my line, was 40 feet away. I saw the fish come over, grab it, the tip up went, and I had to run out. I knew the fish. It's just fun to watch. You know what I mean? I would have saw that tip up go anyways. Well, I might not have.
No,
I mean, it was kind of line of sight with the door open, but it was so cool just to watch that. And there's so many stories. I'm sure Dean's got stories. I got another rainbow trout story where I dropped the live scope transducer down, looked around, and I saw two fish in 40 feet of water, 5 feet under the ice. Went over to that area, dropped down, and caught one of them. It was so cool. 5 feet down in 40 feet of water. I never would have thought that. And apparently,
you never would have caught them. Never would have seen them.
You'd have dropped way past them and been all the way to the bottom and jig, jig, jig up, whatever. So.
And it's a fascinating article. It's on fishingcanada.com as we speak. It's called High Tech Hard Water, How to Use Live Scope for Ice Fishing. And there is a learning curve. This will help you tremendously to get to buy certainly the basics on how to use it and a little bit beyond as well. So check it out. All on fishcant.com. That is the portal, the gateway to your next fishing adventure.
Come on now.
Thank you.
We do have another live scope. I don't know if you guys want to touch on it now. The live scope stuff we've been getting sent in, the two arguments.
We're going to do that. Do you want to do it now? While we're on the subject. Okay, so let's do that. Thank you for bringing that up. That's Dean Taylor, by the way.
Come on now.
Producer sitting behind Woo-hoo! The big desk over there, the big screen. We got to get a camera. Can we afford a camera at some point to get you a little more exposure?
I've had exposure on one show.
That was enough for you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. you obviously didn't like the commentary that came from it, obviously. Oh, my goodness. All right. So there was April of this past year, there was there's an annual consortium of Department of Fisheries and Wildlife Resource officers in Washington, D.C. They get together once a year and they kind of talk, you know, it's a lay of the land, it's a state of the union, whatever you want to call it. They go over things that have cropped up in the previous year that they think are enough, there's enough interest in that they should start looking into it. And this particular April, the fisheries management folks started seriously considering removing the use of real-time imagery, which is what we're talking about just now through the ice, removing that kind of technology because it might be an unfair advantage to anglers, was basically what
They call it real time. They didn't call it forward viewing.
No, they call it real time imaging as a means of legally catching fish. And at least 12 states now are looking into it, which is kind of alarming.
That is alarming.
Because
the way they're wording that, to be honest with you, is that means flashers. That means the amplitude scale on your traditional screen, as well as all this.
That won't give you real time, though, will it?
Yes.
It will give you real time.
It gives you absolute real time. A flasher is right instant under the
water. The flasher is.
The amplitude scale is that little one on the side. It's exactly what it is as a flasher.
It is.
If they're trying to ban all that stuff,
well,
I mean, I don't know if that's what their game is or if it's trying to be forward viewing. You know,
they're looking at it. Right now, there are 12 states that have taken this recommendation to heart and are, I'm assuming, running studies of their own.
And they meet again in April of 24, so in a couple
months.
April of 24, in a couple months,
they'll be reconvening and saying, okay, so what do you think? It's alarming.
Can they stop?
They can do anything they want. It's fish and wildlife. I mean, they can do anything they want. They have more power than regular police enforcement
conservation
officers. I mean, conservation is, which is good, and it should be that way.
Yeah.
What I take objection to, though, is where do you draw the line? Like, how we're drawing the line right now at real time imaging, but you know, if we go backwards in time, say, well, maybe all the way back to a fishing boat, you could say, well, a fishing boat gave anglers unfair advantage when they were used to fishing from the,
off the shore.
Bank, and right. Now all of a sudden they can access the water.
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody back then say, hey, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. We got to study this. But anyways.
Yeah. That could go on forever. You're allowed two lines in the Great Lakes. Well, why are you allowed two lines? We should be only doing one line. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of.
Two thoughts on this one. A lot of folks have come out and said that things like LiveScope, that falls under the real-time imaging that the conservation officers are looking at. A lot of people say that kind of technology allows anglers who might not be able to afford the big, fancy $150,000 fishing rigs that a lot of anglers are using, they don't need them anymore. A lot of people are saying, you know what, that's gone by the wayside because I can take my little 16-foot skiff and now for, you know, a couple of $1,000, give or take, I can rig that baby up to be as efficient a fish-catching machine as those big $200,000 units.
Yep.
So it opens the door for less fortunate anglers to participate in this exciting new form
That's a great point. Spend $2,000 instead of $200,000. You know, this or $150,000. Yeah, that's great. Your own boat, your own setup that you've had for 20 years.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's relative. I mean, instead of $150,000, you spend say $3,000, and you can get yourself pretty well fixed up.
This
type of thing. The counter argument to that will be, if it hasn't already started, will be the fact that, holy crap, that means that we now are going to have an army of well-equipped fishing soldiers that are going to be out there catching and interacting with our fish. What's that going to mean to that resource? What's it going to do to the fishery? Right. If we have that many more, and I have to believe if everything went well, there would be, I'm going to say 10, maybe 20 times more effective anglers out on the water catching these fish than there are today. If this argument comes true, what's that going to do to the fishery? Now you see the legal part, right? Now you say, oh, wait a minute. Maybe we do need to look at this. And say, I would hate that to happen. I would hate to go from, and I don't care what that number is, you know, from 1 to 100 effective anglers out there overnight with this technology. And that's probably why they're looking at it.
Yeah.
I would think.
To me, like, again, you and I have experienced firsthand. And I have to say that we're pretty good anglers. Okay, let's not say we're Bobby Dazzler here that catches every fish in the lake, but we're pretty good anglers. And when we dropped that live scope down, and I even said it on one of the shows that's coming up, we did a whole piece on it on one of our TV shows coming up, I think next week or something like that. Mm-hmm. We saw 100 fish today and we caught 2 of them, or 50 fish today and we caught 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you're not, I don't give a damn, I don't give a shit.
A rat's ass.
Who you are, a rat's ass. Who you are, you're not catching them all. Well, you're seeing there, you are not catching them all.
Okay, I agree with that.
This is in deeper water situations. In the shallower water situations, we don't even use it. We use our instincts. We go back to our instincts. Even in the deeper water, we use our instincts, but back, we don't even use it in the shallow stuff. So that's, we're pounding those banks like everybody else does, and we're catching 20 or 30 fish, and that's all perfectly fine because you're doing that with just a spinner bait and your rod and reel. Well, I don't know. Go ahead. You were going
to
say something.
My argument to you on that is that if you take two anglers and put one of them on top of fish and one of them on top of empty water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one that's on top of fish is going to outfish the other guy.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's what this technology allows you to do.
Of course that does.
It allows you to put yourself where the fish are, which we've said forever is the most important criteria when playing this game. If you're fishing where they ain't, I don't care what you throw at them. I don't care how good you are, or as Pete just alluded to, if you're, you know, Bobby Dazzler, it doesn't matter. If there's no fish there, you're not going to catch them. But if you're in an area that has fish and you're even a marginal angler, chances are you're going to make contact with the fish. It's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, it could be the same as, like, you could say the same thing for a GPS. I could say, Ange, I found 100 fish on my live scope yesterday. And you don't have a live scope in your boat, but here's the waypoint. Boom, go out there the next day. You and four of your buddies go out. No, I didn't find them on live scope. I just found them on a school of fish. The whole technology thing, like from a fish finder to a GPS to all that kind of stuff.
GPS has been a game changer in
our
world. Absolutely. A game changer.
It's all part and parcel to what we do. Right? It's our tools. Go ahead and wire up a house without any tools in your tool belt there, Ange. Go ahead and fix that. Fix those outlets with a kitchen knife. You know what I mean? You need the tools.
Hey, I'm not going to put up an argument because you know I love this technology. I love using it, and I think it's wonderful.
Play 18 holes with a putter.
Sometimes you have to open your mind up, though. And both of you guys said when I read this piece about the conservation officers getting together and maybe, you know, thinking about banning it. How come? Well, I painted a picture for you as to what maybe is going on in their minds. Mm-hmm. They have to manage a fishery.
Yeah.
It's in each one of them has a jurisdiction that they have to manage that inventory. What they're looking at, I'm sure, is if this technology gets into everybody's boat.
Yep.
And we take the marginal anglers now and put them on fish, holy mackerel. Like what's the impact that could have, especially on a small body of water? You know, we're not talking, the Great Lakes. We may be talking small bodies of water. How much of this pressure can those fish sustain?
Right.
And I would find it hard to put up an argument on that.
I've seen, I fished, when I started learning live scope, I fished a small lake. And I'm 100%, we'll say, catch and release, especially with the live scope. I was bass fishing.
Old clubber.
Because I was fishing smallmouth, right? So I don't do that kind of stuff with my smallies. Okay. So first year, I found it
discriminating, quite easy. Discriminating, by the way. You know that's discrimination, right?
No, that's just selective harvest.
All right. I'm just saying.
And I like my pickerel. As Antonio and the boys would say, I like my pickerel. They're going to love that. I got onto the live scope thing my first season in a small lake, very confined lake that you can pretty much fish the whole thing in a weekend for sure. Mm-hmm. And I got the smallmouth thing down. But I said, wow, this live scope is incredible. Yes, I was catching fish that I would have never caught before.
No.
Absolutely. The next year, I was having a harder time. I thought, why am I having a harder time? I had a hard time finding the fish. The year after that, and to this day, I think those fish got smarter because I didn't kill them. There's no way I killed them. And I know they're still there because we catch them without seeing them a lot of times. I cannot get on the same live scope pattern on these smallmouth, which were suspended from 5, 10, 15 down, cruising around. They've changed. Now, I'm not saying I caught them all, but I caught a whack of them. Okay. You know what I mean? So I did catch a decent number of them, and I can't get it anymore. Now, what changed those fish? Was it the pressure of me? Was it the live scope beam going through? Was it, you know what I mean?
Why do you think you're the only one who's capable of going on that lake with technology and catching fish?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that lake.
Why wouldn't you look at it that way? Why wouldn't you look at it?
You think everybody else caught these fish too?
Oh, my God. You know,
well,
what's
on
happening?
That lake, there might be one other angler.
Oh, that's
that
it?
Has that. Yeah, on that technology. This lake is not a fished lake. This lake is the water ski, swimming, and everything but fishing, except for the pickerel boys. They go out and they like to troll them up and catch them, or some musky guys. They'll go out and catch musky. Yeah,
sometimes you'd be surprised at the number of people that are accessing water and fishing.
Oh, no, I'm not the only guy out there.
We have a great example. A friend of ours owns a lodge in northern Ontario, and there used to be this wonderful little portage into this tiny little piece of water. I'm talking tiny, that had just an incredible speckled trout population. And it was fantastic. Well, you know, all of a sudden what happened there, people started accessing it through the ice winter. They're running their snow machines into this tiny little place, and it's annihilated that lake.
Yep.
Like, boom, in a matter of 2-3 years, that lake is gone. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take much. You said, I know that. You said one other person. Well, then my argument is going to be is if that person had anywhere near the skills and talent that you have and the technology at his fingertips, her fingertips, his, whatever, as you have, then that's 100% increase in pressure on those fish. 100%.
Pressure for sure, but I know that guy doesn't keep them either. Oh. He's another, he's a releaser as well.
Okay.
Get very ethical anchor. Right. Does the same thing as me. Gets walleye. He'll go out there.
So to your second part of that question then is, yeah, if that's not the case, if you don't think there's other anglers going in there with.
No, there's other, but there's not.
Then the answer is, yeah, I think you've taught those fish well.
Mm.
You have taught those fish well to avoid you.
Kick my ass. I kicked their ass the first time and that's it. I have not won a fight in the last 3 years. It's freaky. It freaks me out how. It was such a solid pattern that I was telling my buddy, I said, God, you got to come out here and I'm just going to show you these fish on this scope. We don't have to catch them. I just want to show you this. Showed them. And he said, wow, that is so cool like that. And that, it don't happen anymore. It's freaky. And the fish are there because we still get them more blind casting now than anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
you and I have talked about it. In fact, I've even said on a previous podcast that the next big breakthrough in this, real-time imaging technology that we're talking about, or forward-facing, whatever you want to call it, or live scope, or whatever you want to call it, the real next breakthrough is going to be in being able to scramble the signal that it's sending out. Because I do believe that you're right, by the way. I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I do believe you're right. Especially on small bodies of water, I think you're training those fish. When they hear you, hearing in this case is when you've got your unit on and you're blasting signal out towards them, they know, holy mackerel. Last time I felt this, it was not a good experience.
I saw that ugly guy up in that boat.
Exactly. And so they disperse.
Yeah,
and
maybe,
I think the next breakthrough in this field is going to be,
Scramble the signal.
Don't make it the same. Every time you send a different signal out so that the fish are not getting acclimatized.
That'd be cool if we could do that.
It's coming. I know it's coming. It's going to be, we're almost there.
If it's coming, that means your theory is right. If they're doing that, it means that fish feel the signals, right?
Of course they do.
You know what I mean?
You've done enough scuba diving to know that you're, as a human, your senses down there are heightened.
Yeah.
Everything that you hear a little tap in the floor of the boat up on the surface 30 feet away, you hear it down there. You feel it. Whatever you want to call it, you know it's happening. Imagine fish who were born and raised in that environment. They feel and hear everything.
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
You know what? I've always said that the fish are onto us more than we think. Hence planer boards. Why would you use planer boards? You know, you don't need, if fish didn't care about your boat, everyone would be straight behind the boat.
Exactly.
They'd drop them back there and catch them.
Why is that?
So,
and the other thing too, that we've done through the years very effectively and not given it much thought was catch and release. We'll go back to the catch and release thing. How can we possibly think? How? And we do it every day. We'll do it again this coming season. I know we'll do it again. How can we possibly think that once we catch and release, five, six, seven fish into that school of fish that we're fishing, that we haven't disrupted the entire school?
Yeah.
How can we possibly think that those fish that are going back in aren't giving off whatever it is that a fish that has just been yanked out of its environment up into the boat, couple of ugly looking mugs laughing at him, saying, take a picture or two, put it back in the water. You don't think that fish is going back down and delivering some kind of message? Oh my God.
Hey, don't eat that. There's two assholes up there. You don't want to see these guys.
So that's an issue too. And I think more and more it's becoming evident in tournament fishing that you keep releasing fish into a school of fish, you're eventually going to spook that school.
Yeah, I agree. They have to give off some kind of a pheromone or some kind of a signal.
Which is cool. I have no issues with that. But we just need to understand that that's happening.
We need to put them in the live well, Daddy.
Well,
put them in the box, Daddy, and then release them all afterwards.
Certainly if you're in tournament mode, now the reason the tournament's for the most part, outlaw that is because of that very thing, right? They don't want you stockpiling fish in your boat until you're ready to move to another spot and then release them all because of obviously the chances of those fish coming out of the live well healthy if you've got 10 or 15 or 20 fish in there is not very good. Yeah. So, you know, the thing about tournaments, there a lot of people poo-poo them, mostly cottagers, have a very negative outlook on tournament fishing. But I got to tell you right now that everything that we have in terms of fish management, we owe it all to tournaments. We owe it all to Ray Scott and all the boys back then, Roland Martin and all those guys who initiated this whole tournament thing, because it's much like hunters to ducks. Without those hunters who are the conservationists who go out and roll their sleeves up and get their hands dirty and manage the resource, without them, we'd have probably very few of them left.
That's right.
Well, tournament fishermen are exactly the same. They are the basis, the genesis of everything good that we've got in our fishing management tools. It all came from tournament fishing.
Sure
it didn't come from you and me sitting on our dock on the weekend at the cottage.
Nope.
Bobbing for fish. No.
Bobbing for fish.
No. No.
Well, catch and release. Remember when Ray Scott started BAS, it was catch and keep. And they just said, okay, wait a second.
Something's
this
wrong.
Is not working right. Here, we're keeping 5-10 bass per person. I think it was 10 bass per person back then. And then all of a sudden they said, we got to do something about this. Hey, how about we keep them alive and we throw them back or something like that. And then, you know.
Roland tells me stories about back in those days because, of course, he transcended
that,
right? He was the pioneer, along with a handful of other tournament anglers, who gave birth to this whole notion of live release. But he tells me some of the stories. Some of the, you know, they'd sit around drinking beers at the end of the day and come up with these ideas about having water in a tank on the boat.
Wow.
And trying to splash. Roland tells me that they had this thing, this the paddler or something they called it, and it was just he compared it to a ping pong racket
paddle. Yeah,
and they would use that, like they would have a timer on their watch, and they would every 10 minutes go in and spot. Yeah, because they figured that it needed oxygen, right? And so with this little paddle, and it was round and soft, and I think Scott invented it. It wouldn't hurt because if you touch the fish with it, it wasn't going to hurt.
Cool.
It was round and rubber, and
oh my god,
that's what started this whole thing.
Yeah.
Are those guys?
But you're right. There's a lot that's been learned through tournament fishermen.
Oh,
that's for sure.
I think everything we owe to that, without doubt. Anyways, we're getting way behind.
Well, it's okay.
Are we not?
It's okay.
Are we good, Dean? Are we?
We're good.
We don't have to cut anything out here.
No.
There's an adventure just outside these walls.
It's something you'll hate to leave and can't wait to get back to.
It's a place where memories are made and bonds are forged.
For some, it's hitting the trails. For others, it's a weekend at the lake. It's a place full of campfires and quality time.
This year, take some time to reconnect with friends, family, and nature. No matter what adventures await you, Coleman has the gear you need. Visit ColemanCanada.ca to gear up today.
The outside is calling.
Answer the call.
Back in 2016, Frank and I had a vision to amass the single largest database of muskie angling education material anywhere in the world.
Our dream was to harness the knowledge of this amazing community and share it with passionate anglers just like you.
Thus, the Ugly Pike podcast was born and quickly grew to become one of the top fishing podcasts in North America.
Step into the world of angling adventures and embrace the thrill of the catch with the Ugly Pike Podcast. Join us on our quest to understand what makes us different as anglers and to uncover what it takes to go after the infamous fish of 10,000 casts.
The Ugly Pike Podcast isn't just about fishing. It's about creating a tight-knit community of passionate anglers who share the same love for the sport. Through laughter, through camaraderie, and an unwavering spirit of adventure, this podcast will bring people together.
Subscribe now and never miss a moment of our angling adventures. Tight lines, everyone.
Find Ugly Pike now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Yeah, In the news,
Fishing
Canada
sir.
News, reaction from walleye anglers mixed on FMZ Zone 10 in Ontario. Rule
Where's
changes.
That? Where's that?
So that is Algoma. Yeah, right there. There's so Sault Ste. Marie's over there. See the Sault Ste. Marie over there. Yeah. Sudbury over here. That whole
wow, that's northern, a big area, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big area.
Okay.
And what they've done, so what they've done, the first part of it is they've taken, they've shortened the walleye season.
Oh.
Right, I guess, so they dropped the fish size limit now, right, Dean?
Yep.
Yeah, so there used to be one over 46 centimeters and then three under. Now they all have to be under, so all four of them. So they're complaining that they can't keep a big one. So these people that are opposed to these new rules, the new rules say.
So they've eliminated that one big fish.
That one
that everybody
big fish. So every fish has got to be under 18 inches.
I don't understand why that was even allowed. Is it? No, I do understand. I'll tell you, the only thing that makes sense to me is if a guy catches that fish of a lifetime and he wants it on his wall.
I think that's why they...
But that's passé.
I know.
You don't need that Trust fish to me. Be killed anymore to do that.
I know.
So maybe they should just eliminate it right across the board. There's no fish, trophy fish kept, period.
I heard that for a while they thought that fish aged out of spawning.
So no.
They don't, but I thought that in the past that's why they had that rule, was because they were under the impression that, well, if people age out of spawning and mammals age out of spawning, fish must age out too.
But that's silly in this case, because that means a 19-inch walleye is done. You know what I mean? Like, it's no, there's no way a 19-inch walleye is done. You know, especially the females. Obviously, the females. What was the number that the guy gave us, Dean, that years?
18 inches.
18 inches the male. So they're basically trying to get you to get all male fish or a combination.
Yeah.
But in that sense, if that's what that's all about. But there's... I don't know.
I know if you're watching or listening and you have made contact with your personal best anything, any species, I know that you would love to take it home and show people and share that moment with people and all that. I know. We're humans. That's what we do.
Well, it's what we do on TV.
We do it on TV, right? Yeah. But it's just not smart. It's not good. There's no benefit at all, because if you take the measurements carefully, take the measurements of that fish, get a few good photos, and then release it in the water, when you get home, you can have that replica mount done for you to the T.
Yeah.
To the T.
Looks beautiful, too. They do great jobs nowadays.
And now you have your trophy. And you have two trophies. You have the trophy on the wall, and you have the trophy in your head that will stay with you forever, that you had a part in releasing that fish, and chances are real good that fish went on to reproduce.
And you've got the pictures to show people when you want to put it on social media or whatever like that. So
doesn't make sense.
Really, yeah.
So I think more and more you're going to see this type of regulation imposed.
So we're fishing in Zone 10.
Yes.
We catch a walleye that's 20 inches long. That's got to go back, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
Right now.
Can we take a picture of that fish?
I know we started this one on a recent episode too, because they were studying that. They were asking for input at one point.
It's not got this year is completely, they're waiting until next year. Now 2025, we're going to be 2025 will be where the decision is made. So
what Peter is alluding to is that there's been a study conducted and it's ongoing. As far as I know, they want MNR in this part of the country wants to know what you think about no photography of fish that are illegal. Illegal meaning, in this case, if it's over a certain size. In another case, if the season is not open for that species, but you're there catching other fish that are open, if you make contact with the illegal fish, should you be able to photograph that fish?
Yeah.
And that's what they want to know.
Yeah, it's a matter of time. It's an instant release, but the rule state right now is that, and I would believe it'd be here too. If it was a 19 or 20 inch walleye, you have to just take them off the hook and throw them back without delaying any of the release. That's what they're talking about. So I don't know if that'd be in this case or not. I think it would be, wouldn't it? I can't see the MNR beating you up for it, but technically.
They've never enforced it, though. Like with steelhead, you can't keep them most of the time. But people, you take pictures.
My question to you, though, is, to both of you, how do I know that this fish is illegal in this case? I would have to bring it in the boat.
Yeah.
I would have to get out my board.
Yeah.
I would have to hold that fish.
Yeah, make that 19-incher. Sure, yeah. If it was a 24 or 25-incher, you'd know it. But
so you're already molesting that fish anyways.
Right. And you want to put it on the board so you have to keep it.
Well, yeah, you have to. That's you have close. No option. It's closed. If it's a centimeter under, like you're going to keep that baby.
I like
so
that.
So I'm going to, like, you're already molesting the fish. Why would it be illegal then to say, hey, Joe, take a picture of that. I want to send it home. I can't see it. I can't see it at all.
Yeah, it's different. Hopefully they'll change that up and give a little leeway on that. So
I think they have to. They have just no option there.
That's a great point. How can I measure a fish? How do I measure my fish?
Well, you're supposed to estimate it. What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I haven't caught anything all day. I want to take one home to eat, and I'm going to estimate.
Pan, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The other thing they've done there in the winter season has also changed is shortened to the third Sunday in March now. It was 31st. So they've taken a week off that season. And that happens a lot now. I'm sure that all the anglers, they all get up in arms. I remember when the Zone 20 did that for walleye. It used to be the end of March.
Right, and then they moved it.
And they moved to the end of February. They took a whole month away from the not only the ice anglers, but to the open water anglers, because we used to go out. You and I have done it before. We'd put our boats in around the ice and start fishing
away.
It was
the best time.
And,
it was great.
God, it was amazing fishing, and they took that away. So that's done a lot in the MNR, and I think it's, again, it's the management. They're the ones with biologists, right? So they must have a reason for that. They must say, okay, the walleye population is getting lower here. We have to do this. We're going to take some flack from the people, but we have to do it. That's the only reason I could see it, right? I don't know why else would they shorten a season. It has to be fish population, right, I would think.
I wish I could just say, give you a resounding hell yeah.
Give me a hell yeah.
I wish.
Mm-hmm.
But having been involved in some of this process before when there's changes about to be made and seeing how the process works, I have to tell you, I cannot give you a resounding hell yeah, because I know I've been involved in a lot of cases where science had nothing, you know, reasonable science had nothing to do with it. It was just some person. And I, with all due respect to scientists and biologists and all that stuff, sometimes it's a personal agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not suggesting that's what we're looking at here.
Right.
But sometimes it's not what you think it is. And and so, you know, you get people that question it. In this case, we have pushback from this change proposed, which it's supposed to take effect January 1st, 24. So
Right now for this ice fishing
season. The pushback, Randy Fawcett, a member of the executive of the Algoma Fishing.
There's one more though. Wait, there's one more.
Go ahead.
They also increased the largemouth kill, so you can keep on a conservation license there. Normally it's six. You can keep six with the sporting license, two with the conservation license.
Right.
Here they're giving you three largemouth, or bass, not largemouth, bass.
Well, we know what the hidden agenda there is, though.
Say that because it's important. I think it's very important.
There's still the mentality that bass should be eliminated. Bass should be fished out. Bass should not be where they are. Bass are bad. Bass are no good. There's still that mentality. And that's what I said about hidden agendas, personal agendas.
And that's exactly what that is.
Yeah.
That's exactly. There's somebody in the system that says, hey, our lake trout are getting eaten by bass. They put the emphasis on trout instead of bass, you know what I mean? So that's what that is for sure. So,
and that is so, so wrong.
Sad. It's sad.
I mean, it, on so many levels, it's so wrong, because you cannot suck and blow at the same time. You can't say that you're into conservation, but only limited to one species and everything else is frowned upon and should be eradicated. You just can't. You can't do that and work in that environment. The outdoors, wildlife management. You just can't. You can't have that mentality. Bass are here to stay. They are not invading anything. Now, there are lakes that don't have bass in them. And yes, if some idiot introduces bass to that environment, then that person should be shot. I agree. Maybe a little drastic.
Might be a bit drastic, but yeah, yeah.
But as far as the rest of it, nature has put those fish there. And nature is taking care of those fish. We can't decide that, no, I don't like that. It's going to go because I don't happen to like them, right, or I like trout, yeah, or exactly, I like salmon, or I like whatever. Look at the East Coast. I mean, look what they're going through right now.
Oh, no.
In this country. I mean, they are blessed with things that you could only dream, jurisdictions could only dream of, blessed with great new burgeoning recreational fishing opportunities that not only are there for the locals, but bring tourism dollars into these regions that are suffering.
Bringing a lot of interest, regenerating, exactly, rejuvenating an area that's been slowed down, right? Right.
And yet we got some, God forbid I use this word, but some clown up in Northern Ontario who sits on a committee or is a scientist, biologist, who doesn't like bass. He thinks they should have been eradicated day one that we first found them, and he continues to do so. He, she, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it's wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyways, Randy Fawcett, a member of the executive of the Algoma Fish and Game Club, is starting to, you know, rustle the trees a little bit, and he says that many anglers in the region are disappointed in the changes and are asking for more transparency. And that's the key.
That
transparency is from the government when they make these decisions. All he's saying is, hey, guys,
let us know.
Can you show us? Because if you show us, we buy in.
Yeah.
The only reason that there wouldn't be transparency, by the way, is because there's a hidden agenda. Why else would a ministry that is in charge of fish and wildlife not be totally transparent? Well, because in some cases they can't. There's something there that they are afraid you are going to find out about, and they don't want you to. So Randy is absolutely 100% right. Hold their feet to the fire and say, okay, you put this in place. You want us to buy in now? Show us why.
He says, why is the walleye season shortened when there is no evidence that the fish are spawning early?
Right.
They didn't show any evidence of it. They just, yeah, that's a great point.
So, anyway,
great point.
It's going to be interesting because that's a big region, a very popular walleye fishery.
Fishy region.
Yeah.
Very.
So it'll be interesting to follow that and see where
it's. Did they not open bass season there all year for a little bit? Yeah, yeah, it's not there
not,
now.
Not there now.
Yeah, so but they did, didn't they? Yeah, and maybe they got pushback on that because of the that's where Ange and I heard through local anglers that they're doing that because of the trout. They want to get rid of all bass.
I'm pretty sure it is open, is it not?
No, I looked it up today.
Really?
The next one up it is, but not there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they've done. There's a couple of spots, and there's only a couple in Ontario where it's open all year. But there's different limits too. You have to, the key for everybody listening here right now, make sure you look at the regulations every year. You need to look at the fishing regulations where you're going fishing, because each one of those changes so much. I learned something today on the regs because I was looking at this stuff. I don't know if you guys knew this. Lake Erie and Lake Huron, walleye is open all year in Ontario.
Yeah.
All year. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
That's been there forever.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I just thought, wow, that's, you learn something forever. New in that book every time you look at it. So
M&R, by the way, is responding. I don't want it to sound like they're not. One of the things that they cite for the change is that the FMZ-10 zone has the highest road and population density of all the zones in Northeast. So population concerns, accessibility to these waters, obviously are concerns if the roadways allow people to drive into these lakes. But they're also monitoring it, showing results that the walleye population in that area is among the lowest of northern FMZs, and particularly adult walleye abundance is below levels considered sustainable. So here's the problem with making points like that. And that's fantastic. But can you not publish that information?
That's the thing.
Can you not say to Randy and the other members of the club, hey, Randy, here's what we've got. Here's the numbers. Look, 10 years ago, there's not. Wouldn't that be just an easy way to deal with this? I don't get it, man.
Yeah, because I think most anglers, they won't push back if it's legit. If it's, you know, if here's the numbers, the biologists tell you that it's below levels considered sustainable. Okay, you know what? You've proven it to us. Then, okay, we'll set back and we'll... But obviously, they weren't transparent about it by the sounds of things.
And the walleye itself is to blame, too. Damn it. Let's put the blame where
dirty
we should.
Old pickle.
They're so tasty that everybody wants to catch them and eat them.
Those ones that I fizzed, man, they tasted good. I fizzed them in the frying pan afterwards. Damn, they were good. Holy jeez. I couldn't believe how good they were, actually.
You know, they are just a very consumable commodity, and people love to catch them and eat them, and I don't blame them. They are absolutely, absolutely wonderful to consume. And that's also part of the reasoning that M&R is giving, is that it's the most highly sought after species in the area. And
it's the second most sought after in FMZ 10. They're saying during the summer, summer months.
Yeah.
Second most in winter months. What would be the number
trout.
One?
Trout. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess,
would have to be.
Yeah.
Although I find that hard to believe, but it would have to be. That's what they have to say. What other species would be? And, you know... And I know I've gotten myself in trouble over this comment before. So we spent an hour talking about fishing through the ice earlier on in this very podcast. But quite honestly, I'm not a big fan of it. I don't do it anymore. I have a belief that there are a lot of lakes that... The winter fishery is the most harmful part of the harvest of fish. I think that during the winter period, some lakes should get a reprieve. Some fish should get a reprieve from the governor and, you know, get them out of the executioner's box. Because I think in a lot of cases, it's not necessary.
Right.
But that's just an opinion. Doesn't mean it's just my opinion. I think there are lakes. And you know what? The one that came to mind most often was a very familiar lake to us, which is only 20 minutes away from the studio here, which is now completely closed for walleye fishing.
Right.
Because at one point, you know, we talk about transparency and we talk about governments and M&R, et cetera. At one point, M&R asked for input from anglers to the possibility, because the walleye fishing was starting to wane and the populations were dropping. There were
this is Lake other, Scugog you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, Lake right? Scugog. There were other circumstances that led to this as well, by the way. I don't want to put the blame strictly on the winter harvesting of walleye on Scugog for this. But at one point, M&R had to make a decision because they did not want to see the collapse of this unique gene pool of walleye that are on that lake. And so they asked the anglers if they would consider a moratorium, at least a temporary one, on ice fishing. And the answer was a resounding no from the users. And so M&R had no choice but to shut her all down. And they did. And it's still shut down.
For sure.
You know.
I heard an interesting thing from our buddy Chris Hockley. He told me about there's a couple of invasive weed species in that lake that have taken over the walleye spawning areas. And so, I mean, when they were saying it's all about the people killing the fish and all that, well, it wasn't just the people killing. Maybe it was part of it. But these apparently what's going on under the water right now is ridiculous. Apparently these spawning areas, these rocky areas and the shorelines that are getting wiped out by this. I can't remember what the species of plant was, but just another invasive involved in ruining what was a great fishery, or helping to ruin what was a great fishery.
How the hell would that even happen, though, I wonder?
I don't know.
Because Scugog is at the top of the mountain, right? Everything flows out. It's not like it flows in.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is moving out. So in order for invasives to get into a lake like that, they would have had to, in this case, aquatic plants, they would have had to been introduced right on that lake.
Yeah.
Which is another interesting thing to
very
think about,
interesting,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, we know so little about this thing that we love. Sometimes we get way ahead of ourselves. The fish at the end of the day will tell us what they need. And in this case, I think this situation in Northern Ontario will straighten itself out in due time. But
it's a lesson for everybody to honestly just that probably that map was taken out of the, yeah, that, go to the book, go to the fish, Ontario fishing regulations. If you live in Ontario, wherever you live, go to the regs, no matter what you like, what you don't like, you have to abide by the rules or you're going to get charged if you get caught. Right. So learn the new, they always write in red, the new regulations that come out. Like I did today, I learned about Lake Huron and Lake Erie. Ann's knew about it. I didn't know about that. I mean, I fished my whole life here and I didn't know that there was an all year on there. So you, there's so much you can learn, but you need to know the rules. You really do. You're your own liquor control board in a sense. You just have to know it. If you're on that lake in that zone, you need to know the rules to that. So it's very smart to do.
Oh, I think we beat that one to death.
Yeah, that's okay. That's
okay. Fan question. My favorite part of the show. Fan question of the week is submitted by Dominic Govia.
Govia. Is that another C or no? What is that?
Govia.
C. No.
Where are you getting the C?
I don't know. You started. You just,
Govia.
I don't know.
Where are you getting the C?
Govia versus go by your own car. You gotta take
Where are you getting a C? I want to know.
I don't know if it was an Italian name or not, maybe.
Govia.
I don't know. Is it an Italian
name? But where's the C?
C. You said to me, I said the Italian name to you the other day. Went, C. Bueno, Santa Napera, Grimalata. You started doing all that stuff. So.
No, he's from Ontario. He's not from Italy. Oh, he's from Ontario.
I'm sorry, Dominic.
And he contacted us via email. See, automatically, because he's.
Say, you just said C again. C.
Thank you. If you've got a burning question that needs to be answered, submit it to info@fishincanada.com.
Yes.
And Dean will take it from, he'll tear it off of the machine where you sent it in, and he will put it in his 45-gallon drum that he recovered from the local scrapyard a couple of years ago and cleaned it all up and got it all pretty and shiny.
It's
and
a bigger drum, I
think. It's a bunch of bullshit.
No, it's not. It's not.
Thank you, Dino. Good one.
Anyways, send it to us and we'll endeavor to answer, just like we're going to endeavor to answer Dominic's question. He wants to know, who did you both look up to as a fishing icon growing up? I think we've had this one before.
Yeah, I think we probably have. But we can definitely answer it for Dominic because he took the time to write it, right? I think.
Right.
You know, anybody that writes these questions in, they all have a good, they deserve an answer. How's that? If we talk about it. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I think. No, because I'm trying to think of what my answer was on the last time I answered this, and I don't want to contradict myself. So allow me to.
I think the last one was who introduced you to fishing, I thought.
No, we did this icon thing before.
I think we have something.
Well, that's fine. That's fine.
I think mine, for all time, would be Roland Martin. I have to say, Roland Martin, because I used to love bass fishing. Then I got into this tournament craze in my whole life, really young and all that stuff. So I'd have to say Roland Martin. And another one that was big with me, if I can go on to more than one, was Rick Klun, who
later on,
and after Roland started getting his butt kicked by certain people, Rick Klun was a huge one in that one. And the other one to me, the other two to me, we mentioned earlier in the show, the Lidners.
Oh, for sure.
Al and Ron. They're so, in a technical fashion, those guys are Al still, Ron passed away, but Al still has such a great philosophy in fishing and there's a technical aspect and he just really gets into it nice. So those are the guys that I would really say have been
pretty much got it all covered there. Yeah. I mean, I could go a couple of years earlier than that. I think somebody who got me into the whole outdoors and because of fishing. Do you remember Kirk Gowdy?
Yeah, the American sportsman.
The all-American sportsman.
I'm Kirk Gowdy.
Oh, yeah, man.
That was a really nice show, too.
That guy got me hooked on getting into fishing for sure.
Yep.
And our very own Red Fisher here in Canada, who had a nice run for a while in a totally different way. But he was an inspiration to me.
Yeah, I used to watch Red, but it wasn't an inspiration.
Roland was really the guy, though. Roland has to be at the top of...
if you're a bass person, then, especially our age, if you're a bass person, he is the guy, you know what I mean? So there's different guys. KVD nowadays would have been, and he's even retired now, too.
He's done.
You know, and now Jacob Wheeler's a big name for the younger guys they're looking up to, but there's always somebody there who's iconic in the bass world for sure. So.
Yeah, but there's never been another Roland.
No,
Roland is so...
He's got the credentials. credentials and he's got the personality. He's such a great guy.
I love getting into his head, even now at his age today.
Oh my God.
I love sitting down and talking to him and getting into his head because he's got such interesting viewpoints on things.
Yeah.
Totally, you know, just when you think he's going to go this direction, he veers off and zigs over here. It just blows my mind every time. Wonderful
Well,
guy.
Fun,
and still producing a great show.
Yep.
Still at her.
Hardcore, man. Hardcore isn't the word for this. How old is he?
84.
84. We edit his show and we see all the footage. And that guy runs around a boat like an athlete. Like it's unreal.
He's got some knee braces this
year.
He's got some new stuff happening.
So he may be showing a bit of a touch of weakness, but the guy has got kryptonite or something. He's unreal.
You know, I got to tell you something from a behind the scene look and point of view. The difference, though, Roland at 84 and us at our age doing this work, Roland does it all by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a crew and a bunch of guys who are all sort of helping in the heavy lifting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
He does it all by himself.
Yeah.
He's a one-man show.
He's a monster, that's for sure.
Oh, he's a monster.
I love the guy.
Anyway, so hopefully that answered your question.
Thanks, Dominic.
Dominic, thanks
for writing
but
in.
But I think if you go back to a previous episode, you'll see we answered that probably in a totally different way before. Hopefully not. We'll see. All right. What we were supposed to be talking about this whole time, which we totally blew, but we'll just cover it real quick.
Yeah.
A couple of things. The main segment was supposed to be about this year, 2024, sees us here in Canada as, I won't say the last man standing because that would not be accurate, but one of the last men standing in our industry.
Maybe the last men standing in a national level, no?
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe coast to coast?
Yep.
Level?
Because everybody's retired. Which I don't know how to take. I don't know what to think of it. Everybody's retired or retiring.
Yeah.
And that leaves us in a
We're talking fishing show. Fishing television shows here.
Yeah.
Everybody's wondering.
Puts us in a weird predicament because we look at ourselves like, well, wait a minute. Do these guys know something we don't? should we have been quitting ourselves? Are we sure that we want to stay at this? And so we've been asking ourselves a lot of questions. And it's not a cop-out from our standpoint, but we still have to evaluate all of the information that's out there right now.
Yeah.
Because the industry is on a bit of a flux. The consumer's not aware of it, but this industry right now is riding on a really thin rail.
Correct.
Right? A lot of things have and will be changing in short order that will change the playing field, the landscape of this business completely. So, you know, did all these other people bail out? Knowing that this was coming up, I don't know. Are we the idiots who can't see? Do we need to?
That's a great question.
Do we need to pull our head out of our asses?
How long ago did Bob Azumi
retired?
A couple years.
This will be season three.
Season three. Yeah. So I don't know. Things were pretty good back then. So I don't know if Bob predicted that. I think Bob just wanted to. That's enough with the fishing shows. I want to go and I'm going to be consulting for fishing companies, and do my thing, fish some tournaments because that's what Bobby does. He loves fish tournaments and all that. So he probably kind of said, "Okay, I need to move on to some more fun stuff." Maybe I don't know. What I was thinking about that. Charlie Ray, I'm not sure. Charlie just retired. I think we announced that a couple weeks ago or a week ago, and Fishful Thinking. And we just got verification of it. Ange and I just got verification of it. So I don't know what Charlie's thoughts are on it either. Because he's younger. Charlie's younger than Bob, that's for sure.
Oh,
right?
Hell yeah.
I would think Charlie's.
But you just said something that caught my attention. I didn't want to interrupt you because you were on a roll there. But you said these guys wanted to do something more fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is there
anything more fun than what we do?
Yeah, doing it without a cameraman in your face, without having to produce a show, without having to do all that kind of stuff.
Lovely Absolutely. Vova.
I love Vova. I'd like to take Vova fishing for fun. without having have Vova have to shoot. I was like, Vova, let's just go catch and release fishing and let's have some fun. Vova is throwing some interest in catching with casting out in BC and stuff like that.
Yes.
It's just it's work.
So
it's
are you
work
finding versus not work. Are you finding that the camera is becoming a little cumbersome?
The camera has always been cumbersome.
Okay.
Always, because it's not the same as just going out fishing. When I, in my previous life to fishing Canada, before I started doing this, it was just going out with your buddies and fishing whenever you want. You have, you know, it's fun and you're doing it for fun and you're doing whatever. Maybe you're going out for a feed of fish or whatever. It's different when it's a job. It's a job.
Okay.
That's the whole thing. It's called a job and it makes it different.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
I'll remember that.
Well, I think you should have already known that. If you haven't known by that by now, then I think you're in a closet somewhere. I don't know. Jeez.
I don't know. I don't know whether I can agree with your assessment that they want to move on and do something that's more fun, because I think each one of those gentlemen that you just mentioned, and now I'll go south of the border. I'll jump the border and say people like Bill Dance, Roland Martin that we talked about, and good friend Jimmy Houston. Do you think that they are doing it for anything other than they love it and they're having fun?
I got it.
Do you think, Bill
income
Dance,
must be something to do with it?
Are you serious?
Got to be something to do with it.
Are you serious?
Got to pay some bills somehow, don't
okay.
you?
Okay. First of all, I can tell you with total certainty that two out of those three gentlemen
are millionaires.
They have no need for money. Money is an encumbrance.
Okay.
So let's remove the money from that.
Money's never an encumbrance.
It is an encumbrance for them. There's two out of the three there.
He's got to be one of them right there, doesn't he?
I'm not saying.
He's made millions on his bloopers alone.
I'm not saying.
Guy.
So money is not the issue. That guy does it because he can't give it up because he's afraid that he'll stop having fun.
Good point.
That's that guy.
Okay.
The other guy.
I'll give it to him.
Is probably as close to that mentality as Bill, and that is Roland.
Right.
The third guy that I mentioned here, Jimmy Houston.
Yes.
There is nobody on this planet that has more fun than Jimmy every day that he's on the road.
Okay.
Nobody.
So if everybody's having fun, nobody. Why are these guys retiring then?
Well, why did Bob that's, and why I'm that's why I'm throwing that out, and that's why when you made that comment, I had to stop and say, what's going on here?
So what I'm saying is maybe not everybody takes your opinion and says it's fun. That's all. I'm not saying it's not fun. It's the greatest job in the world. I'm saying it's a job versus not a job. Okay. Now, you're different, too. You own the company. I'm an employee. That's different, too, in that sense.
Okay.
As being an employee, no matter what, you work.
What's the difference
life.
Between you and me?
Well, obviously, you think it's a lot more fun than I do.
Good point. On that note, we should probably end this conversation because it's going down the wrong road.
No, don't get me wrong. I don't want to leave it on that note. I love my job. This is fun. Right here, this is fun. What we're doing is fun and all that stuff. But
What you don't know, you like about what you do?
No, I think it'd be even better if I didn't have to have all the encumbrances that you just said. Isn't that the word you just said, the encumbrance?
So you want to be by yourself.
No.
Go and come as you please.
Well, I like that sometimes. Yes, I do like that.
But. And do not enjoy all of the, because it's not just about the fishing. You see, here's the difference, I think, between my opinion and your opinion.
Right.
I don't do this for the fishing.
Right.
As you know. Okay, I have many more interests in my life than that. I'm not one-dimensional. See you later, Joe. Have a great day, buddy.
Yeah. Joe's coming back.
Joe Gorskowski, big hand for Joe as he goes for lunch.
Joe would agree with me right now, okay? Just with the way the boss just said something like that right there. Okay, smart enough.
Have a good lunch, Joe.
You don't live for just fishing. Absolutely.
No, right.
Absolutely.
So for me, what we do for a living is... When I say it's fun, it's so unique. It's so damn unique. There is not another
agreed 100%
occupation 100%. In your case or company in my case that you could do and be involved in that is anything even close to. Think of what we do. We'll sit here in the next month or so and we'll design where we want to go and travel to all of next year. And then we'll get on a plane and we'll, or in some cases, we'll drive to these wild, domestically exotic places that most people do once in their life.
Absolutely.
If they're lucky.
Absolutely.
They will do it once.
Agreed.
We do it year after year after year, yeah. And we have the ability to change it up. We can pick and choose. We can do whatever. Yes, they're long, hard days. Yes, we hit some shitty conditions weather-wise. Yes, the beds are not always the most comfortable in the world. Yes, I do not have porcelain everywhere I go. Yes, 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 yes. But at the end of the day, when you take all of that and sit back and look at it and say, my God.
You're not hearing me.
My God.
I said, this is a damn fun job. It would be even more fun if I didn't. It wasn't a job. That's all I'm saying.
Well, what is a job? Volva, can you help me? You're new to this country. What is a job? A job is a source of income. Right. Thank you, Volva. A job is a source of income.
Right.
All right. So we're going to, Dean, we're going to fix him up right away. We're going to remove the income part because obviously the income is an issue with him.
That's what it is.
So let's eliminate. It's not a job anymore, Peter. Congratulations.
Money. I want to do this for free.
Well, there's a lot of advertisers out there who think that that's exactly what we do.
Good one. Anyways, that's the way to end on the note.
We are getting carried away.
That is good.
Enough of that nonsense. Enough of that nonsense. Wow.
That was good.
Do we have anything else to cover? We pretty much sunk this baby.
Dean's got a bunch of stuff, but we're good. We can
sunk
shut her
this
down.
Baby. This baby is sunk in the mud. Want to thank everybody for joining.
We got barotrauma. You're going to try and push us back down there now. Get down there and get the geez.
Thank everybody for joining us. Once again, thank you. Thank you because without you, we would not be where we are. We wouldn't be able to do all these wonderful things that Peter doesn't like doing. So I appreciate you.
You know.
Keep watching, keep listening, keep tuning in, keep whatever it is you're doing, keep it up. We appreciate it. I'm just kidding.
I know. You know.
On behalf of the entire team, it's time for us to say goodbye. Peter Bowman, Volva. Nick is on vacation. He'll be back next week, I think. And Dean Taylor, our producer.
Now.
I'm Angelo Viola. Thanks for joining us, folks. Talk to you next time.